Welcome to the Cloud Computing Show. My name is Gary Ornstein, host of the Cloud Computing Show. With me today is Edgard Capdeville. Thanks for joining us, Edgard.
Hi, Gary.
And our guest today is Jake Sarofman, who's the Vice President of Marketing at RPath. Welcome, Jake.
Thanks for having me.
Pleasure. So I wanted to get started this morning with just some industry news. It's been a couple of weeks since we did our last show, so quite a bit has happened. Of course, the biggest news, which you know may or may not be directly cloud-related, is the Oracle acquisition of Sun. And the question I had for us is that while Sun has sort of been desperately trying to become synonymous with cloud, does Oracle really care about any of the cloud activity that Sun has pursued? What do you guys think on that front?
I'll take the first stab. I think there's been a lot of comments and positioning, especially early on from Larry Ellison, and then Oracle announced late last year a partnership with AWS to provide some of their 11i infrastructure tools as VM. So I think there was the early comments were just that, comments and positioning from the company's CEO, colorful CEO, I should say. And then the next ones were smaller projects in the catch up type of approach here. I think the Sun acquisition, you know, although the projects at Sun are very early, they are actually real projects and can actually pan out. I think Oracle realizes that the primary OS deployment for all their database infrastructure is primarily Solaris, and associating itself with Sun, even on the cloud side, makes a lot of sense, even if those projects are early.
Jake, how about you? Do you think Oracle cares about the cloud focus at Sun?
I think they absolutely do. I complete 100% with Edgard. Larry Ellison is certainly a provocateur and a contrarian. So I think some of the early thoughts were really to stir up the market and attract attention as opposed to really address a strategy of records. And with the acquisition of Sun, because Sun has a fairly complete and certainly very compelling cloud strategy in place, Oracle will be forced to get on board with that.
Yeah, I'm not convinced. I think that some of it might still be the Oracle desire to control the end-to-end food chain from application down to the bare metal. But we'll definitely see what happens over the next couple of months. Another item that came up is McKinsey, the famed consulting firm, came out with their cloud computing report. It seems that you know, everybody has to come out with their own report. I took a brief look at a presentation that was online, and just a lot of focus on definitions. And I guess the question I have is, do we need to keep talking about definitions, or can we just start talking about more products and services? What do you guys think?
I'll take a first crack again. I think the primary goal of the report was to position McKinsey as a cloud thought leader, and I think the report unfortunately did not achieve that objective. They made the case, as you said, Gary, a lot of definitions in the front. In the conclusion, they made the case that the cloud is expensive, particularly for the large enterprise, that in-house data center deployments are more economical for those large enterprises that have scale, purchasing power, and could take advantage of some accounting situations that are associated with data centers. But I think it missed the mark because, as we all know, the cloud is not really just about cost. I think larger cost gaps will grow over time as cloud vendors gain scale. But I think they missed the mark associated with the fact of value received. A good analogy would be a lot of us can, you know, do our laundry and cook our food more cost effectively than our current alternatives. But at the end of the day, we want to specialize, we want to focus, we want to save time. So we use service providers, and I think eventually, you know, we are in the early days of the cloud, and with time, third-party vendors would have a lot more scale. They will drive cost even lower. They will have better products. They will have better service quality. They will be more specialized. And if you're a large enterprise, do you want to be in three or four businesses at once, including the war for talent, for virtualization experts, for OS experts, for all sorts of technological expertise, in addition to your own business, whether it's insurance or whatever? I don't think you want to be in that many fights. And I think McKinsey made the mistake of issuing a conclusion very early in the process that unfortunately it's gonna bite them later on.
Yeah, Jake, any thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. I very much agree with a lot of what you said. I think it was myopic, and it was it was probably rushing to a conclusion. The report that I think, or the asset that I think is really useful from a definitional perspective. And by the way, I think we do need clarity around definition, segmentation, best practice, and sort of understanding the taxonomy and the segmentation of the cloud space. The piece that does a better job at that is IBM's Open Cloud Manifesto. It does not rush to any conclusions. It's not as ambitious as the McKinsey report, but it does a very good job at laying a foundational context around what cloud is and what it isn't, and some of the key guiding principles that you need to think about as it relates to cloud.
Well, all I can say is I hope that we move as quickly as possible from definitions to products and services in the context of those definitions. So hopefully that'll catch a little bit more hold as opposed to just the pontification.
Agreed.
Last item I want to discuss, and speaking of products and services, VMware announced their vSphere 4, and my take on this is they're targeting private clouds. And the question I had is, is this VMware's only cloud hope of going after enterprise private clouds? We all know they've got a huge penetration in the enterprise, not so much penetration in newly crafted web applications and internet data centers. So do they need private clouds to take off in order to have any kind of cloud offering and cloud success? Jake, what do you think?
So I think the answer to the question succinctly is no, they don't. I think by focusing on the private cloud, they're situating themselves very squarely in where enterprises are thinking strategically as it relates to cloud computing. Internal cloud is clearly an area of focus, and will become even more so over time. But the vCloud initiative is potentially even more interesting, and this is the idea of federating clouds, of providing a consistent and coherent management strategy across cloud environments, because ultimately, where do we want to go but to a sort of seamlessly integrated fabric of multiple compute environments where applications can be deployed? And that is, at the end of the day, the real definition of what cloud is about. It's completely transparent to the end user, and applications can move across those execution environments very seamlessly. So I actually find the vCloud vision to be more compelling. And more important to their long-term success.
So, but you see this as maybe using the enterprise private cloud as a gateway, so to speak, to being able to migrate and move between different clouds, including other clouds like Amazon or Google or Microsoft. Do I understand you correctly?
That's exactly right. I think it's going to be a blended combination of internal and external clouds, public and private clouds. And the internal cloud is certainly a key consideration for enterprises and an area of investment going forward. So I think they're smart to make investments in delivering technology to enable that, but even more importantly, to embrace this notion of hybrid cloud and providing management tooling that spans multiple cloud environments.
Right. I mean, that seems like a more logical progression to me. I guess they've got to start somewhere, so they're starting with this singular focus on the private cloud, which might be the best, first step to get there.
It certainly makes sense to me.
Anything to add there, Edgar?
I think we touched a little bit on this in the last podcast. I think it is a 1-2 punch. I think as a good mid-sized to large company, they have to follow the money, and I think the first punch is very accurate. By touting private clouds, they can get early revenue on the message or the bang on the buck on that messaging. I also agree very much with Jake. I think the roadmap that VMware has laid out here includes having their platform become the bridge to extend cloud computing from the private cloud to the public cloud. And I think the roadmap will be served, I think, later this year, when major service providers announce using VMware infrastructure as the foundation for their cloud. I think it's not necessarily going to be, let me extend my VMware private cloud to the Amazon cloud, which is at the foundation, not 100% compatible. But I think it's going to be more around enabling VMware MSPs to be kind of public cloud providers, so that VMware customers that have built private clouds can now extend those VMs outside of the private enterprise cloud into the more public cloud that is all powered by the VMware Foundation. So I think that's the 1-2 punch that these guys are looking for here.
Well, they certainly will be a hot topic of a conversation for the foreseeable future. Great. Well, let's jump into the guest Q&A today. We're really happy, Jake, to have you. RPath, I've been following RPath for quite a while. I know the company's been around and it's got some exciting new things as well as a great business to date. Before we get into the company activities, tell us just a little bit about your background. You've got a variety of great experience and sort of how that led to your arrival at RPath.
Sure, you bet. So my background is really primarily focused on software startups. I think this is my 6th or 7th startup that I've been part of, all venture-backed, all fairly early stage. And what attracted me to the RPath opportunity is really this notion of application centricity has been really validated by the emergence of virtualization and cloud. It's forcing a change in how companies think about how systems are deployed and how they're managed. And it's moving the focus from infrastructure to applications. And that really piqued my interest. And it's the emergence of virtualization and cloud and the fact that these are becoming very large macro trends it created a whole lot of excitement around this opportunity for me. It's really drawing attention to and shining a light on this way of thinking about application deployment and systems management. And I think it's the future. RPath is a key ingredient of that transformation.
So give us a general overview of RPath as a company and the primary products.
Yeah, you bet. So RPath's been around for about 3.5 years, and we focus on providing a simplified way to deploy and maintain complex enterprise applications. So today, deploying and maintaining applications is very manual. You have to go through the process of standing up a server, spinning up an application, tuning, tweaking, configuring. It's sort of invention for the first time every time, in aligning all the layers and versions within the stack to make the application work, and it's time-consuming. And the process of maintaining the application is equally manual because there's so much drift and churn in the configuration of all the layers within the stack. So it's becoming a very complex process that's putting pressure on organizations that are looking to automate and take cost out of the way that they deploy and maintain applications. So what we do is we provide a platform that enables organizations to automate the creation of a ready-to-run, fully configured system that can be deployed to any traditional bare metal environment, any hypervisor-based environment, or any cloud computing environment. So that whole set of activities around creating and configuring a system, deploying a system, and maintaining a system is completely automated. And the way we do that is by we'll consume the binary or the source coming out of an SCM or a build automation system, deeply inspect the application. So introspect the application, discover its dependencies, and based on those dependencies, we bind to the application just enough operating system, all the middleware and tooling that the application requires to run, and then we produce a ready-to-deploy complete system that's fully configured from the app down to the disk that can be deployed excuse me, to any of those three environments.
So those three environments, you said again, could be a bare metal environment?
Yeah, bare metal environment, so a traditional server cluster.
Right, in which case you'd be bundling, for example, a Linux operating system as well?
Correct.
Okay, or a hypervisor environment, so a VMware as one example.
VMware ESX, Citrix Xen, Microsoft Hyper-V, Virtual Iron, just to name a few.
Right, and then on the cloud side, going an image for Amazon Web Services, EC2, if I understand that correctly?
Absolutely. So we're pretty much target agnostic. Our goal is to support each and every target execution environment that our customers demand. So today we can land on Amazon EC2, Rackspace, GoGrid, Globus, BlueLock, just to name a few.
Right. Now, do those variables need to be determined at the time of the build in terms of what the destination of the system is?
Yes, but we automate the creation of the build. So it's no big effort to go back and create a different output format. And what we do is we provide a consistent and sort of single system definition from which you can produce virtually any format. So the system definition is the same, and it's managed under version control within our repository. And you can go back and literally reselect a different target output format and automatically create a different build to deploy to ESX versus Citrix versus Amazon EC2 versus an ISO that you're going to deploy to a bare metal server.
Okay. I mean, just to use a sort of crude consumer-level example, it's sort of like saving the application different file formats that could be used for different other applications.
Exactly right. Yeah, okay. That's a good way to think about it. And in the process of doing this, we also instrument the package with management tooling so we can automate the delivery of updates and patches to the system in production. Mm-hmm. And the reason we're able to do this is because during the process of dependency discovery, we capture very, very deep dependency knowledge and configuration knowledge and store that within our repository. And by virtue of having that deep dependency data and understanding the impact of change, we can seamlessly implement patches and updates to each and every layer within the stack, the running system, without creating collisions and conflicts.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
So we've effectively taken the manual effort around the whole process of deploying applications and maintaining applications over time.
Mm-hmm. So you wrote in one of your recent blog posts that, just quoting you here, IT has lost its way and become far too focused on infrastructure rather than applications. Can you just provide a little color commentary to that?
You bet. And exactly what I described is an application-centric approach to creating systems. Today, what we do is sort of from the bottom up. We focus on the various layers within the stack as independent sort of general purpose layers. So someone has to manage and maintain the operating system. They have to manage and maintain the application server, the web server, the libraries, et cetera. And all of that is done by different people with different roles with different tools. And the problem is there's too much focus on those on infrastructure for the sake of infrastructure with little or no regard for the application itself. At the end of the day, what companies care about is applications that create, that deliver business value. And infrastructure is only interesting to the extent that it enables an application. So our premises start from the presumption of the application and work down. So use the application as the basis for understanding your infrastructure requirements, bind the infrastructure to the application itself, and then manage the application, and as a byproduct, manage the associated infrastructure. So it's a much more sort of vertically oriented approach to systems management, as opposed to spending time in the weeds, so to speak, focusing on infrastructure for the sake of infrastructure.
Right. So, you know, computing is all about trade-offs and optimizing one parameter over another. Is there anything that someone's giving up when using RBuilder compared to a native application deployment?
You know, I would say just the contrary. One of the trends that's making our approach very interesting and relevant is the growing complexity of applications. And the reason applications are becoming complex in part is because developers now have a whole universe of choice. They can use all sorts of different programming languages and frameworks and open source components. And that range of choice is pushing complexity down on the IT ops folks who are responsible for deploying and maintaining those applications. So we're actually freeing developers to use whatever tools and resources they need to innovate around the creation of working application functionality while insulating the IT ops folks from that complexity and providing an automated approach to deploying and maintaining the systems that are the output of all that complexity. So I think it's just the contrary. We're actually opening up a whole universe of choice for enterprise organizations that are feeling the pressure of all this complexity resulting from a variety of choices that developers have today.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So last week, I think you guys did an announcement on RBuilder 5, your latest release. What are a couple of the highlights from that release?
Sure. So the first highlight is we've refactored the user experience and dramatically reduced the complexity of the process of going from a concept to a ready-to-deploy system. We've removed 50%+ of the steps associated with creating and deploying a system. So that's the first theme. The second theme is we're now making RBuilder available as a free public download. It's available free of charge for up to 20 running instances. And can be just downloaded, installed locally, and organizations can start using it for trial and evaluation, of course, but also for small-scale production use with no charge or obligation to RPath. And then the third thing that we delivered is a management console for all the basic requirements associated with deploying a system into production, and starting it up, shutting it down, the basic actions that you need to take to provision an application into a virtualized or cloud-based environment. That's not to say that we're looking to go into that space strategically, nor are we looking to displace incumbent tools for provisioning and management. It's just good enough capability so someone can realize the full experience of going from concept to deployed system in a cloud or virtualized environment without having to integrate with their existing management tooling.
Gotcha.
Jay, can you walk us through some of the common use cases for your customers in your different segments or industries, if you will?
I'm happy to. So the first segment is really related to just automating the process of deploying and maintaining applications. And there's some companies that we're working with who are feeling great pressure around this issue associated with complex applications. So developers have tremendous power and discretion to use whatever tools are at their disposal to create new applications. And that's putting pressure on the IT folks who, by the way, are being told to take cost out of their infrastructure. So their budgets are being pressured. They're being told to take 20% OPEX out of their budgets, for example. And they're being asked effectively to do more with less. And the pressure of a variety of different application types and variants that are being pushed down on them against this reality of not being able to throw people at the problem is forcing them to look at new models for deploying and maintaining applications, and that's where we fit. And we think of that as just really complex application delivery in the context of what could be a bare metal environment, what could be a virtualized environment. The second segment that we're seeing is really sort of pure cloud interest. So these are companies that are looking to take existing applications and package them up for deployment and management within either internal or external cloud environments. So they're just looking for a fast path to deploy applications to the cloud and on-ramp to the cloud. And that could come from a variety of different places. It could be applications that have very transient, unpredictable demand, and they need unlimited compute resource for the purpose of demand that they simply can't prepare for. Or it could be, for example, in delivering a traditional software product as a service, as an on-demand service by way of the cloud, without having to go through the process of re-architecting that application for multi-tenancy.
Right.
And the third segment, just to mention another one very quickly, is really the ISV OEM model. And this is where we have our heritage. We have about 60 customers today who are ISVs who are packaging and delivering their commercial software as what's become known as a virtual appliance. So it's essentially a self-contained complete system that's ready to plug in and run in any environment. And that helps ISVs to reduce platform certification and support costs and to accelerate time to value for fairly complex technology that used to take weeks or months to install and configure and now can simply be laid down in a period of 15 minutes or less.
Jake, what should we be looking from your company or in the market at large in terms of application delivery for the rest of the year?
So continued focus on this idea of automating complete ready-to-run systems that can be managed as self-contained independent units in production. So the ROI that we're focusing on today is really driving cost and overhead out of the process of application deployment and application maintenance. And in our experience thus far, we've been able to see 400% ROI and a 4 to 7 month payback on initial investments in this technology. So it's a fairly compelling business case. I think you'll continue to see a lot of activity and interest around cloud computing. But today, in our experience, it's really just around the pragmatic measures that organizations can take to reduce costs and increase agility and responsiveness, and the role that we can play in helping them to automate the process of deploying applications to a variety of different environments. Cloud is a future, and cloud is something that's very interesting strategically. But I think the activity is really going to be much more grounded in real ROI as it relates to cost.
Great. Thanks, Jake. I think we all need to spend more time thinking about applications and focusing our attention on applications, since that's really what gets everything accomplished. We do tend to get carried away sometimes with the infrastructure discussion, and it's nice to come in from a different angle.
Couldn't agree more.
So I wanted to move on to the final section of the show, the cloud tips, where we try to talk about some consumer-facing or business-facing services that we use day-to-day. One that I've been a big fan of is something called Doodle.com. I think it's a Swiss company, and they have just optimized the number of mouse clicks required to either schedule an event or make a choice. I think everyone's gone through this dilemma of how to schedule a multi-person meeting, particularly when not everybody's on the same exchange system or similar. And I've used it many, many times. I always get great comments. So check it out if you have a chance, doodle.com. Jake, any recommendations, cloud tips from your side?
Absolutely. I'd like to make two. And first, let me say I'm going to go get Doodle now because I've been waiting for that to emerge. That's certainly a very real problem. The two that I'd like to mention are R-Builder Online. So that's the RPath online community site that allows you to create public and private virtual appliances projects. So you can just upload your bits, introspect your application, create a ready-to-run system, deploy it to Amazon EC2, and get started free of charge without any download or any installation. If you choose to download or install RBuilder, you can do that as well. So just visit rpath.com to find all the different options to get started. But the second one that's maybe a little bit less biased and self-serving is a really interesting company that's just now emerging, and I think they announced funding this week, and it's called Good Data Corporation. It's founded by a guy named Roman Stanek, who I used to work for. He's the founder of NetBeans, and he's also the founder of Systinet. And the company is funded by Mark Andreessen and General Catalyst, a really interesting company focused on business intelligence as an on-demand service delivered in the cloud.
Neat. We'll check it out. Edgar, any tips from your side?
Yeah, absolutely. I've become a user of a product and a company. The product and the company are both called Sopny, and it's actually Inbox spelled backwards.
Oh, right. I've heard about this one.
Yeah, this is actually a great product. It's a it comes in the form of an Outlook plugin, and it's really Outlook Analytics combined with access to LinkedIn and Facebook. So, you know, how many times have we been looking for that email from this person? I know I have this email from this person. I just don't know in what folder it is, and it's actually pretty old. So this tool has indexing capabilities that links a person's name coming from your Outlook to any part of data that is contained in that Exchange server. So you can find all the emails in one organized panel, and you can also see if you get an email from a new person, who that person is from LinkedIn, and what are they saying at Facebook, if the emails coincide. So it's a really great tool. It saves me a lot of Outlook search time, and it brings context and color to your interactions. It's a great product.
Great. Excellent. For Outlook users only at this point, right?
The plugin that I install is for Outlook Exchange only. That's correct.
Gotcha.
And that's Inbox spell backwards.
Got it. Well, that's a wrap up for today. Thanks, Edgar, for co-hosting.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
And Jake, thanks very much for joining us. Is there any place you'd like to point people to for more information on your side?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to point people to rpath.com or rpath.org. rpath.org is the site for rbuilder.online, the community site for building and deploying virtual appliances.
Excellent. And thanks again to our audience for listening. You can visit us at thecloudcomputingshow.com or email us at thecloudcomputingshow@gmail.com. We look forward to your feedback, and we'll see you on the next show. Take care,
thanks,
everyone.
Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.